Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Earlier this week, Brighton Council agreed to assign one member to the Northumberland Food Policy Council starting next year. If you've never heard of the Food Policy Council, you may not be alone. It has toiled away behind the scenes working towards creating a more sustainable system of food production and local distribution for many years. It created a food charter, works with the county's farmers markets, and promotes buy local when it comes to food. In this interview, you will hear Brighton Councillor Jeff Wheeldon make his case for promoting the Food Council and why municipalities in Northumberland, not just Brighton, should be working with this group. Have a listen and see if you agree this is a good idea for Northumberland County. Councillor Jeff Wheeldon, a member of the Northumberland Food Policy Council. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you for having me, Robert.
Why did you bring this motion before Brighton Council at your recent regular meeting earlier this week?
Well, I first found out about the work of the Northumberland County Food Policy Council when I was representing farmers as a realtor, as a real estate agent, and I had farmer clients who were trying to find farmland. And that got me down the rabbit hole of the economics of agriculture in our region and really across North America. The short of it is that farmland right now is more valuable as for its development potential, or even as an estate lot for a large home for someone retiring from the GTA, than it is as an active farm. There are a lot of farmers who are looking to retire over the next decade or so. About two-thirds of existing farmers will retire in that time. Most of them have no succession plan. They don't have a kid who wants to take over the family farm. And so they are banking on getting a good price for their farm in order to fund their retirement. That makes perfect sense to them. And I don't think most of them could do otherwise. The challenge then becomes, if they wanted their farm to stay as an active farm, it would need to be affordable for a younger farmer to purchase it and take it over. And that's typically not who can offer the most money. And so we're seeing massive amounts of farmland being converted into residential land, or being effectively converted, not formally. It's still formally agricultural designated land, but you end up with a lot of people who own 100 acres, build their dream retirement home on it, and lease out some of the land to a neighboring farmer. And so what ends up happening is that over time, more and more of farmland, even farmland that is being farmed, is not owned by the farmers. So the farmers have no collateral. They can't really invest in their business because they don't own the land that they're farming. This also leads to something called farmland consolidation, where a neighboring farmer who already has 300 or 400 acres can buy up their neighbor's farm when they retire. And so the big farms get bigger and the small farms disappear entirely and get consolidated. And big farms can really only grow cash crops, which are commodities, things like soy or corn or wheat that get shipped out to other parts of the world to be processed. It's not food that we eat here locally. And so as I explored more and more the way that things like municipal planning policy incentivizes this kind of farmland conversion, I was very pleased to see that Northumberland County has a food policy council. And they look at matters of land use planning related to farming, but they also look at things like food security and healthy local economies, sustainability, all things that I'm already passionate about. So I joined Food Policy Council a couple of years ago to talk more about these issues. And recently, the Food Policy Council has been getting more and more active, really engaging the community more and wanting to see more connection with municipalities, because that's where a lot of this policy actually happens. So they started looking at what's a way we can get counselors more engaged. And I said, well, I am a counselor, but I'm here just as a regular resident. But it makes sense to me that, especially since I don't know what's going to happen this fall with the election, it makes sense to me that the Brighton should regularly delegate someone from council to sit on this food policy council.
So what is the advantage then of getting a council member on this food policy group?
Well, having a direct connection between the people who are sharing their experiences of being farmers or being food insecure or working with farmers markets or things like that, having those voices engaged with decision makers, I think is an important step. Now, we do this with a lot of different groups. We have members of council who sit on citizen committees, boards, other groups in the community that have public interest matters, you know. So we send a member of council to sit on the Quinte Economic Development Commission, for example, things like that. So this is the only food policy council or group that deals with food policy in the region. And we are an agricultural community historically and currently. It's our second largest industry.
But doesn't that conflict with the rural committee that you have, the one that's supposed to link with farmers and talk about those issues? I if I'm not mistaken, you already have a committee that deals with that.
Well, we do have a rural advisory committee, and the rural advisory committee is not specifically about agriculture or food insecurity or economics, but it is about making sure that the rural residents of Brighton have a voice. And so rural Brighton is not necessarily all agricultural, but we do have a history in which Brighton Town and Brighton Township were amalgamated about 25 years ago. And there has been concern ever since that people in what was formerly Brighton Township have lost their voice because they no longer have their own local council. And of course, we like to say, well, you have us and you're welcome to run for council as a rural resident and we represent all of you. But making sure that those people have a voice directly to council was important to us. So that's the point of the Rural Advisory Committee. And yes, there's a lot of overlap there. But Northumberland Food Policy Council is a broader organization that serves agricultural interests and food security matters in the entire region.
Well, from the group's perspective, then the policy council's perspective, why does this group need political involvement then? Why can't it just advocate on its own?
It can advocate on its own, and it has been for some time. When I joined, there were no members of council sitting on it. The CAO of Trent Hills was a member then, and we do also have Aisha Malik from the health unit, who is a regular member of the group as well. And so there is already some political representation, and the terms of reference of the Food Policy Council has always sought that representation from municipal governments. And ideally would be more integrated with municipal governments, either at the county level or at an intermunicipal level.
Can we take a step back for just a moment?
Sure.
I'd like you to tell us about the Food Policy Council itself. Can you tell us a bit about the history and maybe its policy goals?
Sure. So food policy councils in Canada go back to the first Canadian one was in 1991 in Toronto. And the current chair of the Northumberland Food Policy Council, Russ Christensen, was a member of the Toronto one back in the 90s. So he has a long history with it. But what they do is they bring together food activists, but also food experts, looking at the many different elements of food in order to look at municipal policy through that lens. And so, for example, one of the things that came up when I brought this before council is, what are the things that we've done? Well, one of the things that we did is we sought a meeting with the planners of Northumberland County to look at the official plan review, because we've noticed that there are certain things in the Planning Act and certain things in the way that municipalities implement that actually lead to this farmland consolidation problem I was talking about earlier. This is a result of policy. And so by using a food lens, we can make policy recommendations. Now, this is not a bureaucracy. We don't have any power per se. And we are advocating effectively on our own without municipal representation right now, because even though I'm a counselor, I'm not formally there as a counselor, just as a guy. But the more that we can be engaged with that, with decision makers to bring that food systems lens, the more that we can actually change policy to make it more functional for food systems.
One of the things that the Policy Council advocates for is a food charter. Can you tell us what that is and what does it mean and how is it significant?
Sure. The food charter is really just it's almost like a vision statement. Northumberland County Food Charter has been endorsed by all 7 lower tier municipalities as well as county council. That was several years ago. But it's basically a series of statements about what it is that we support. We support things like public policies that recognize a healthy diet that contributes to well-being, incorporating food security into emergency planning, educating population on food health and the environment and sustainability, a lot of things like that. It's available on northumberlandfpc.com. But it really is just sort of a vision. Now, what we've been doing lately that has been really good is almost a refresh. We've been bringing together stakeholders from across Northumberland County, including farmers and food advocates and people who work at farmers markets or run food security programs, things like that. And they've all been coming together through the Center for Healthy Communities at Loyalist College, which has been facilitating sessions for us. And we have been envisioning what a sustainable food system in Northumberland would look like. And so that might look at, do we have enough capacity for local farmers to actually have their foods processed locally? I know that there are people who have organic grains in Northumberland and they have to ship them pretty far away in order to just have their grains processed. So we don't necessarily have that local capacity for processing food. There's probably more need for Ontario Agri-Food Venture Center like businesses as well. Do we have good food distribution? Why is it that I can get food at my local grocery store from the other side of the world, but I can't get it from a local farmer? These questions really, they are problems that we can solve. We just need to spend some time thinking it through.
What do you hope to achieve through supporting a buy local food program? I mean, are there not other programs like this? I mean, there's Foodland Ontario, there's the OFA Homegrown Public Awareness Campaign, there's the Farmers Markets Ontario, Buy Local Food Across Ontario Alliance, the Sustain Ontario are just a few of the groups that promote buying local produce. Why do we need another voice in that crowd?
That's an excellent question, Rob, because you've listed just a small number of the many groups that are in many ways already overlapping, maybe even competing, probably unintentionally, and yet are not facilitated or coordinated at all. And so having almost a policy think tank that can help create a map of a healthy food system and see where one group picks up and the other one leaves off, see where they can work together and collaborate or where they can cede territory to someone else so that we can all have sustainable engagement with ideas like buying local, ideas like eating healthy, ideas like supporting land access, all of these things. I'm finding this in so many different areas that there are so many people who are doing good work in isolation and they don't even know who else is out there doing similar work. And so having this kind of lens that we can apply through policy and at a regional government level could really help us to sort out who's who, who's doing what, and how can we best support you all.
I'd like to bring it back to the municipal level now and talk a bit about how a municipality integrates food into land use planning.
Sure.
Could you explain that? Because that's don't they have enough to worry about now besides, one more thing to take into account?
Yeah, I mean, municipalities are doing more and more. You're right. And A lot of it is to do with the structure of government in Ontario. Municipalities are not even mentioned in the Canadian Constitution or barely mentioned. We are just recognized as being creatures of the province. And so typically the way things work is that the province makes rules about how things should be done, and then the municipalities are the ones that have to implement them. And so we don't have any mechanism within our current municipal structure in Brighton for supporting food. But we do have land use planning requirements set by the province through the Planning Act and other legislation that determines how big or small a lot can be, things like that. The province doesn't set all of those rules, but they create the framework within which we set our own rules locally. And some of those rules are very specific. For example, back in 1978, the province had this idea that we should not allow designated agricultural land to be in lots smaller than 100 acres or 40 hectares. And the idea was that if you've got land that is designated agricultural, that means that it's got soil quality, that means it can grow good food. And you don't want to see that turned into estate lots where somebody builds a mansion on a big piece of land and then we've lost that good farmland. So it is a good rule with a good intention. But the reality is that I see this all the time in real estate that, even a 100-acre farm is still worth more as a 100-acre building lot for that mansion than it is necessarily as an active farm. And so we're already seeing that farmland conversion happen even with huge lots. Now, at the same time, we have some younger farmers, particularly associated with the National Farmers Union and things like that, who are looking to start small farms, whether that's, sheep, or whether that's market gardens. And you can't market garden 100 acres. It would take a whole lot of gardeners to market garden 100 acres. And so the idea that someone could start in agriculture, it's very difficult for them to do so with that rule of farmland needs to be at least 100 acres. And so you've got a lot of people who are trying to get as much money as possible for their existing farms, which are tend to be large. And you've got a few people who are trying to get their foot into the door into this industry and grow things that we can actually eat locally, and they just can't.
Before we get too far down this rabbit hole, yeah. I've got to say, I mean, isn't that what official plans are about? Isn't this what zoning's about? Is being able to preserve certain areas and not allow development to take place? And isn't it up to municipalities? I mean, you can say all you want about the province and the rules and downloading and all that good stuff, but ultimately, it's your official plan. It's mm-hmm. the county's official plan. It's the approval of severances, of building lots, of whatever developers come in or property owners come in and say, listen, I want to do this with my property. I mean, doesn't that really come down to you guys and how you do your planning? I mean, isn't that where it all hits?
Yes, and that's exactly why I want to see more councillors on the Food Policy Council, because from a planner's perspective, the provincial rule about 100 acres is almost godlike law, even though it's actually written in a very permissive way that says, as a general rule, you shouldn't sever lower than 40 hectares. If you talk to a local planner, they'll say, no, absolutely, we cannot do that because of this thing in provincial planning. And if councillors don't understand the difference, then they're going to take the word of their planners, which are highly important, and I really value our planners. But the food policy lens says, hold on, we need to be careful that we are not actively disincentivizing local market gardens in an economy where we need them. And without that connection to the Food Policy Council, I wouldn't have understood all of this either.
It sounds to me like you do a lot of networking, you do a lot of talking, and a lot of great ideas. But can you give us some examples of concrete steps or actions or programs that this group, this food policy group, has run recently? And what were the results?
Sure. So the most exciting thing that we've done in the past quite a while has been these visioning sessions for a sustainable food system in Northumberland. And as I say, that brought together a lot of stakeholders from across the county and across many different sectors. And just trying to say, okay, what is missing here? What is needed in order to make our system thrive? And I know that's not very concrete. It's very much visioning. But until you have a vision, you don't know what to do next. Now, we're at a situation in Northumberland where we all recognize that agriculture is a core component of our local economy. But as we said earlier, municipalities are currently not doing anything in particular to support agriculture. I know that the Economic Development Department in Port Hope is putting on an event for rural economic development. And I know that CRAMI is going to be putting on one as well. And I'm going to be attending these as a member of the Food Policy Council. But I know in Brighton, we're not doing anything of the sort at the moment. And finding ways that we can connect even our local farmers to a farmer's market in Port Hope or a food processing system in Colborne, these are all important things that we could be working on. But currently, that hasn't been our focus.
When you're Council met and discussed this at length, it pushed any action off until the next term of council. I wonder how you respond to that. How do you feel about that?
Well, I will say, add a bit of nuance to that. We did pass the motion, but said that we should appoint someone during the next term of council. That was ultimately my goal. I am currently a sitting councillor, and I'm currently sitting on the Food Policy Council as well. And so that connection between the ideas and perspective of the Food Policy Council and local decision makers in Brighton is already established just by virtue of me volunteering. I don't know what's going to happen this fall with the election, but my main goal had been to try and ensure that next term some kind of continued engagement would happen. And so I'm really pleased with this result. I don't see it as putting it off. They did want more information. And so we're going to get a report back from staff at our next meeting. And getting more information on the table is always a good thing.
So, Jeff, where do you go from here?
Well, I will continue to engage with the Food Policy Council for the rest of the term and maybe thereafter, either whether I'm a councillor next term or not. But right now, the next step for the Food Policy Council is hopefully this motion passing in Brighton will inspire other municipalities to similarly delegate members and really add some connection to municipalities at a time when we're doing this pivotal visioning work, because we know that you can't have good policy if you don't do the visioning work first. And so we're laying the foundation for municipalities to take steps to better support the agricultural community and food security for our residents moving forward. So the next step is to keep on as we're going, and hopefully the municipalities will join us.
Jeff Wheeldon, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Pleasure, Robert. Thank you.
That was Brighton Councillor Jeff Wheeldon, member of the Northumberland Food Policy Council. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at ConsiderThisNorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.